Today is Saturday, January 24th, and this is the World Socialist Website. The January 23rd mass protests in Minneapolis mark a turning point in the fight against dictatorship. Statement by the Socialist Equality Party. The massive demonstrations in Minneapolis on January 23rd mark a new stage in the development of the class struggle in the United States. On Friday, more than 100,000 people in Minneapolis, Minnesota braved sub-zero temperatures and a wind chill of minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit, negative 34 degrees Celsius, to join the Day of Truth and Freedom protests against the murder of Renee Nicole Good by an Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, agent, and the ongoing federal occupation of the city. The protest drew in broad layers of the working class, healthcare workers, educators, postal workers, and many others, alongside many students and sections of the middle class. Immigrant and native-born protesters marched side by side. Downtown Minneapolis was taken over by demonstrators whose march stretched over many city blocks. Every skyway was filled with people. Video of the protests shows streets packed with people in all directions. Thousands carried signs demanding ICE leave the state, calling for the prosecution of the ICE agent who killed Good, and denouncing the rounding up of immigrants, including the abduction of 5-year-old Liam Ramos. Some carried banners proclaiming, quote, "We will stop American Nazism," end quote, while others invoked the ideals of the American Revolution against tyranny and dictatorship. In addition to the main rally, smaller demonstrations were held throughout the city. Street corners and neighborhoods became centers of protest, involving dozens to hundreds of people, including families with children. The massive turnout came in the face of relentless slanders from Trump and the gang of fascists in the administration, of protesters as insurrectionists and terrorists. Protests were also held in over 100 cities across the country, including walkouts by hundreds of high school students in Georgia and other solidarity actions in major urban centers. The most important feature of the January 23rd protests was not simply the turnout, but the popularization of the concept of a general strike. The demand for mass coordinated action has emerged not from trade union officials or politicians, but from below. Across the U.S., a mood of defiance is building, driven by the growing realization that a different power must be mobilized, the power of the working class. For the past 45 years, the trade union apparatus had suppressed the organized resistance by the working class. Since the crushing of the PATCO, Professional Air Traffic Controllers Organization, strike in 1981, every major struggle has been betrayed or shut down by a corporatist union apparatus that identifies its interests with those of the corporations and the state. This was accompanied by a deliberate ideological campaign promoted by the Democratic Party to redefine social struggle along racial and gender lines. But this narrative is beginning to break apart. While the ICE rampage was the immediate catalyst, the protests have erupted amidst an intense and accelerating crisis of American society. The United States has reached a point where the scale of political breakdown and the ferocity of class tensions are generating profound shifts in consciousness. The protests, moreover, have centered on issues of state violence, which is leading the working class into a direct confrontation with the capitalist state itself, not only in Minneapolis, but across the country. Coming out of the January 23rd protests, the task is now to build this movement into a conscious, coordinated industrial and political struggle. The Trump regime is not backing down. Its response to opposition is escalation and violence. Vice President J.D. Vance traveled to Minneapolis on the eve of the demonstration to defend ICE and downplay the threat of military intervention, even as the administration threatens to invoke the Insurrection Act to justify the use of federal troops. As many as 15,000 active duty soldiers from the 11th Airborne Division are on standby. ICE raids continue daily, with footage emerging of agents threatening to label protesters domestic terrorists for simply recording arrests. The Department of Homeland Security, DHS, has issued a memo asserting sweeping powers to override the Fourth Amendment and raid homes without judicial warrants. What is unfolding in Minneapolis is the spearhead of a broader conspiracy to criminalize dissent and establish a military presidential dictatorship. Trump, acting on behalf of the financial oligarchy, is dispensing with democratic forms of rule. In Davos, he declared, quote, "It is sometimes good to have a dictator," end quote. He meant it. The protests of January 23rd mark the beginning of a movement in the working class against Trump's dictatorship. But this power will not develop through the institutions of the Democratic Party or the union bureaucracy. It must be developed from below through new forms of struggle rooted in the workplaces, neighborhoods, and schools where workers and young people can organize their collective strength. At every point, the trade union apparatus has acted to suppress anger and try to prevent a genuine general strike movement. The national AFL-CIO and most major unions issued no public support for the January 23rd action. State and local federations, including the Minneapolis Regional Labor Federation, nominally endorsed the protest, but insisted workers must remain on the job, citing no-strike clauses in contracts that they themselves negotiated. At an indoor event held during the protest at the Target Center, American Federation of Teachers, AFT, President Randy Weingarten, Service Employees International Union, SEIU, President April Verrett, and Communications Workers of America, CWA, President Claude Cummings Jr., gave speeches filled with empty platitudes and pablum. Their support for the demonstration was purely platonic, as none of these officials had called workers that they nominally represent out on strike. If the unions had called a strike, many workers said everyone would have walked out. This, indeed, is precisely what the apparatus is determined to prevent. Many workers who participated wore union logos, but there were no organized delegations because the union apparatus explicitly opposed strike action. The Democratic Party, for its part, spent the past year doing everything possible to contain, suppress, and divert mass opposition to Trump. While posturing as critics of the administration, the Democrats agree with the fundamental premise of Trump's domestic policy, especially on issues of immigration and, quote-unquote, national security. In the weeks leading up to the January 23rd protest, while masses of workers and youth were preparing for demonstrations, the Democratic Party was busy ensuring the continued operation of the Trump government. In a series of votes in the House of Representatives, the Democrats helped pass critical appropriations bills, including full funding for the DHS and ICE, the very agencies spearheading the assault on Minneapolis. Bernie Sanders, meanwhile, has issued vague and impotent warnings about authoritarianism, warning that Trump is threatening democracy. But he offers no political strategy beyond appeals to the courts and preparations for the 2026 elections, 10 months away, and far from guaranteed to occur under conditions that resemble anything like democratic norms. The return of Trump to power, as the World Socialist website explained, marked a violent realignment of American politics to bring it into conformity with the oligarchic structure of society. Now, the other side of that same historical process is beginning to emerge. The working class is entering into struggle. The events of January 23rd must be the foundation for a sustained and coordinated counteroffensive, armed with a clear understanding of the nature of capitalism, the role of the state, and the historical tasks now posed before the working class. The Socialist Equality Party calls for the building of rank-and-file committees in every workplace, every factory, depot, warehouse, office, school, and hospital must become a center of organization and political discussion. Workers should hold emergency meetings, elect delegates, draw up demands, and link together across industries and regions. These committees must coordinate mass action, defend those under attack, and lay the foundations for a general strike. That is, the complete shutdown of economic activity. This cannot be limited to Minneapolis. Trump's conspiracy for dictatorship is national, and the response of the working class must extend across the entire country. Moreover, what is happening in the United States is a concentrated expression of the turn by the ruling class in every country to dictatorship and war. The International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, IWA, RFC, has been established to provide the structure and leadership for such a global counteroffensive. It fights to connect opposition to fascism and dictatorship with the struggle of the working class against war, job cuts, inflation, and social misery. The Socialist Equality Party urges workers and young people to take this discussion into every workplace, school, and neighborhood. Talk with your co-workers and classmates. Begin forming rank-and-file committees to plan and coordinate mass action, share information, and prepare for the next stage of the struggle. The development of the class struggle against dictatorship must raise the fundamental political questions. This is not only a fight against a criminal government, but against the social forces that stand behind it. The entire state apparatus, ICE, the DHS, the police, the military, exists to defend the wealth and power of the capitalist oligarchy, to defeat dictatorship, war, and repression. The working class must take up a conscious struggle against the capitalist system itself and fight for socialism. ICE murders another Minneapolis observer the day after mass demonstration. Early Saturday morning in South Minneapolis, a man observing Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, kidnapping operations was assaulted and then shot multiple times by an as-yet unidentified federal agent. The man was on the ground and being beaten by multiple agents, at least seven of whom are visible in the video, when one of the agents stood up and began firing his pistol. Audio in the social media video released indicates that one or more agents fired over 10 shots. The shots were fired deliberately over a 5-second period with the intent to kill. The man was on the ground the entire time, the shots were fired, and posed no threat to multiple federal agents. Minneapolis Police Chief Brian O'Hara confirmed that the man died following the execution-style shooting. Following the latest murder of a Minneapolis resident just over 2 weeks after Renee Nicole Good was killed, a large crowd has gathered at the scene demanding the ICE thug be arrested and that all agents leave the city immediately. Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey, in league with Police Chief O'Hara, has deployed Minneapolis police officers to the scene, while Governor Tim Walz has deployed state troopers. Some residents have already begun blocking off the street with dumpsters and furniture. Police have responded with tear gas. The shooting comes less than 24 hours after 50,000 people, workers, residents, and youth swarmed downtown Minneapolis in a mass demonstration against the federal occupation. Minneapolis teacher, quote, "Educators are supporting the students using their voice, but the unions are telling us not to strike," end quote. At the rally on Friday, an elementary school teacher said, quote, "Working in the schools, I have seen a lot of children who are afraid, frustrated, and scared. They are protesting at recess times. They are making signs to take home from art class. They are asking me questions about why the government would be kidnapping and killing kids. These are students who are kindergarten through sixth grade. The older students are starting to do their own organizing and walkouts." Quote, "Educators support the students using their voices, but the unions are telling teachers not to strike. It is frustrating to see them say they support us, and then when we do something and organize and try to organize a strike, they suddenly oppose us." Quote, "The system that we have is not working. We need to come together and make sure that we are supporting the working people's voice and make a system that works. I work in the same district that I went to school in. It is like night and day, the difference between how it was back then and now. I never had to worry about somebody bringing a gun to school. You know, I never had to worry about whether my classmates would be kidnapped by the government. It is crazy to watch what these kids go through and still be able to persevere and come together and support each other. It should inspire us all," end quote. Asked what she thought about the role of the Democratic Party was playing, she said, quote, "You know, it's been a lot of big talk, but all bark, no bite. Mayor Frey said, 'Get the F out' to ICE, and then he turned around and he said he wouldn't support abolishing it. I think the people who know him and have been around him didn't expect any better from him. It's all words and no action." Governor Tim Walz says he's going to call in the National Guard to support us. Then the guards show up and start suppressing protesters. Frey says he's going to call the MPD, Minneapolis Police Department, when we all know where they stand, trying to suggest that the systems that have been oppressing us are suddenly going to be on our side when we all know that they are not, and we are watching them do the opposite, is a bunch of bull, end quote. Asked what she thought about developing a network of rank-and-file committees in the neighborhoods, schools, and other workplaces so workers could begin organizing themselves independently of the union apparatus and build the momentum for a real general strike, she said, quote, "I think we've got the guts to do it. We have been able to see over the past week that people are willing to stand with each other. We have to be willing to come in and do the hard work that has to go in behind the scenes to make the big things happen. So I think that's what we need, not just in Minneapolis. We have seen it all over. I have been reading things that people all over the world are sending. Just seeing people from New Zealand and across the earth knowing that what is happening here is wrong, and that they are willing to stand up and say they support what we're doing here on the streets, is giving us some of the strength we need to keep going," end quote. Democrats vote to hand Trump hundreds of billions for immigration crackdown and global war, by Andre Damon. As the Trump administration proceeds with the military police occupation of Minnesota in the face of mass resistance and wages war all over the world, the majority of Democrats have joined with Republicans to pass a record military spending bill. On Thursday, the House passed the Combined Defense and Consolidated Spendings Bill, H.R. 7148, by a vote of 341-88, with 149 Democrats voting yes and only 64 voting no. A separate bill, funding the Department of Homeland Security and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, H.R. 7147, passed 220 to 207, with 7 Democrats crossing the aisle to vote yes. Republicans made no secret of what Democrats were voting for. After the vote Thursday, Representative Tom Cole, chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, declared the legislation would, quote, champion American military power, ensuring that our brave warfighters have the tools, weapons, systems, and capabilities to meet any foe anywhere in the world at any time, end quote. He summarized the bill's purpose in 3 words, quote, America first, fully funded, end quote. Representative Ken Calvert, chairman of the Defense Subcommittee, said the bill, quote, protects the administration's America first defense agenda, end quote. The House Appropriations Committee issued a statement hailing the, quote, Republican-led funding that puts America first. These bills advance President Trump's agenda, end quote. Despite Republicans openly proclaiming that the legislation would fund Trump's fascistic agenda, nearly 2/3 of House Democrats voted in favor of the defense and consolidated spending bill. An opposition party that votes this way is not in opposition, but an active collaborator. The Democratic Party is an instrument of the same ruling class that stands behind Trump. The total defense appropriations amount to $839 billion, some $8.4 billion above what even Trump requested. The bill funds $27.2 billion for 17 warships, including a Columbia-class nuclear ballistic missile submarine and 2 Virginia-class fast attack submarines. It allocates $7.6 billion for 47 F-35 stealth fighters, $3 billion for the Air Force's 6th generation F-47 fighter, $1.9 billion for the B-21 Raider stealth bomber, and $4.5 billion for hypersonic weapons systems. The legislation fully funds the ongoing, quote-unquote, modernization of the nuclear triad, the B-21, the Columbia-class submarine, and the Sentinel intercontinental ballistic missile. The Department of Homeland Security receives $64.4 billion, with approximately $10 billion earmarked for ICE. While the vote totals differed between the two bills, the fundamental intention is the same. The Democratic Party is systematically enabling the Trump administration's assault on democratic rights and its preparations for global war. The 7 Democrats who voted for the DHS funding bill, Don Davis, Henry Cuellar, Laura Gillen, Marie Glusenkamp-Perez, Vicente Gonzalez, Jared Golden, and Tom Suozzi, voted to fund the military occupation of Minnesota currently terrorizing immigrant communities. More than 2,000 ICE officers have been deployed across the state. Earlier this month, Renee Nicole Good, a 37-year-old Minneapolis woman and U.S. citizen, was shot dead by a federal immigration agent. A 5-year-old boy was detained by ICE officers. On Wednesday, whistleblowers leaked an internal ICE memo authorizing agents to enter homes without judicial warrants. The passage of the military spending bill comes after the Trump administration invaded Venezuela, overthrew the Maduro government, and seized the country's oil resources as part of Washington's drive to consolidate its grip over Latin America in preparation for confrontation with China. On Friday, U.S. President Donald Trump announced that a, quote-unquote, massive American fleet is heading towards Iran, quote, just in case, end quote. The USS Abraham Lincoln carrier group has reportedly been redeployed from the South China Sea to the Middle East. This follows Trump's bombing of Iranian nuclear facilities last year. At the same time, Trump has called for the annexation of Greenland, a territory of Denmark, a NATO ally. The drive to seize Greenland, combined with threats against Panama and military operations throughout the Western Hemisphere, reveal an administration preparing for global conflict on multiple fronts. Trump has demanded that the military budget for 2027 reach $1.5 trillion. In a post on Truth Social, he wrote, quote, "For the good of our country, especially in these very troubled and dangerous times, our military budget for the year 2027 should not be $1 trillion, but rather $1.5 trillion." End quote. The Wall Street Journal editorial board enthusiastically endorsed Trump's demand in an editorial Friday titled, quote, "A Serious Defense Budget at Last," end quote. The subtitle declared, quote, "A $1.5 trillion military will cost much less than a war with China," end quote. The editorial insisted that, quote, "The U.S. military is too small to prevail decisively in a war with a peer," end quote, and that, quote, "The real choice today is between guns and runaway entitlements," end quote. It concluded, quote, "The best way to go down as a peacemaker is by building a military no one wants to fight," end quote. This open declaration of support for massive military expansion from the leading organ of American finance capital exposes the ruling class consensus behind the drive to war. Whether under Democratic or Republican administrations, the trajectory is the same. Ever greater military spending, ever more aggressive wars, and the preparation for a catastrophic global conflict. The Democratic Party's vote to fund Trump's military buildup continues a pattern of systematic collaboration. Throughout 2025, Democrats voted to fund the military, refused to oppose regime change operations, and accepted the consolidation of authoritarian executive power. They represent no opposition because they serve the same class interests as their Republican counterparts. The working class cannot rely on the Democratic Party, on Congress, or any faction of the political establishment to oppose the drive to war and authoritarianism. Opposition must come from below, from the independent mobilization of workers in the United States and internationally against the capitalist system that produces war, dictatorship, and social inequality. The building of a mass socialist movement is the only way to halt the catastrophe being prepared by the American ruling class and its political servants in both parties. For these articles and more, visit the World Socialist website at www.wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Jesse Thomas.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.